The Sunday Morning Linux Review with Mary Tomich, Tom Lawrence, and Tony Bemis as the Beaver.
All right, and this is episode 177.
Snonix.
Snonix, yeah.
Yes.
That's because some of our Linux friends are probably snowed in over on the East Coast.
Yeah,
door-to-door geek.
Yeah. There's quite a few people we know over that way, and they're just getting pounded. One of Kim's friends said she had shoveled her driveway three times. No, six times.
numerous
right,
times.
Right. And otherwise,
and it just kept coming down.
Yeah, otherwise you're gonna be shoveling pile or 2 feet of snow or whatever they're gonna
That's
get
incredible.
At a time. Yeah.
And I was just poo pooing the whole thing, saying, oh, it's just overblown, these estimates. They're probably gonna get no more than a foot of snow, but I was wrong.
I didn't hear the latest count, did you see?
It was 20?
I thought it was 32.
But I guess it depends on where you are.
Or feet.
32 feet of snow.
I believe it's inches of snow.
Okay.
But feet makes a better headline.
Right.
So anyway, but that's the reason behind our episode name. So we hope everybody's safe and you get started digging out. And, some of you may get a snow day tomorrow.
I'm sure they will.
That's one thing I miss working from home is I never got a snow day. Those snow days are great.
27 inches so far in New York.
Okay.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, they showed pictures of Times Square. They have the big bulldozers in there, those front-end loaders, and they're just scooping that snow out. I lived in New York during one of the blizzards, and it's really kind of amazing because you can go down to Times Square, or up to Times Square in my case, and there was just really not much snow there at all because they put it in trucks and then they haul it out to the river and just dump it out there.
Yep.
So, or the harbor, wherever they go. So anyway, well, I guess we'll catch up.
Yeah. So what'd you do, Mary?
Oh, you beat me to it. Well, last week I did a road trip to South Carolina. Thank God it was last week because I'd be in trouble this week.
Yeah.
I think West Virginia got a foot and a half of snow, or parts of it anyway got a foot and a half of snow. So I was down there for that. It was nice to get into some 60 degree plus weather for a bit, although it rained a fair amount. So I did that. Got together with my magician friends. And what else did I do? I want to talk a little bit about my experience using my Project Phi phone from Google.
Yeah.
Which, those of you who don't know, Project Phi, of course, is Google's wireless service. And what they've done is they've stitched together, and I use the word stitch just not because it's not done smoothly, but just as a way of describing it. They have stitched together the Sprint network as well as the T-Mobile network. So I had a chance to use the Google Maps and experience that this year, because I did it last year when I had my Kyocera phone, and the only service I had on that phone was T-Mobile, which I got through Metro PCS. And last year I got lost in Bennettsville, North Carolina, because I had no service, and I tried to follow the correct state highway, but the signs weren't really well marked, and I ended up getting lost. But obviously I found my way out of that. but this year I went and took the same route, and I did it with Project Phi, and I'm happy to report that not once, even though there were several times where the wireless signal was not there, never once was I without a map route. And what's very interesting, or at least I thought was interesting, was when Google transitioned, say, from Sprint to T-Mobile or vice versa, what would happen on the screen is that suddenly the maps would kind of like reorient. It was kind of interesting. But just for a second, though, it was like the map was, it's, you know, when you have your phone horizontal and you turn it vertical? I mean, it was that kind of change in the screen just for a second. And I could tell, it must have jumped to another network.
Although, just to interrupt a little bit, I think there's an update to Google Maps that will cache your entire route ahead of time.
There is.
Oh, and I'm glad you mentioned that because there is, and I did that. Because I did a little reading on it ahead of time because I have the very smallest plan, the 1 gig plan. Mm-hmm. And and I'm actually going to mention what I used for no one who's interested on Project Phi. But I think it was, January 18th when I drove back. Well, we went as far as Winston-Salem, North Carolina last, Sunday, and then Monday, this past Monday, then all the way from Winston-Salem to Detroit. But I used around 100 megabytes for the entire route. Now, I thought I cached it ahead of time, and it seems like a lot, 100 megabytes of data for that entire route.
Right.
What do you think?
A little bit, maybe, but I don't know if it grabs your mail or something because you're out for so long and, you know, different.
It might have done that. But anyway, I was very curious about that. And I'm just happy to report that that cross-country trip, or, well, it wasn't cross-country exactly, but that that lengthy trip went off without a hitch as far as navigation goes. So
yeah, that's
so
awesome.
So I'm very, very happy with my Project 5 phone.
P5. That's cool.
Yep.
Makes me jealous. I'm like, should I get one?
Well, you should consider it once your contract's up.
Yeah.
So.
Yep. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about. This, it's this what, October, so I have another like 9 months, but yeah.
Yeah, so it's, and then if you want 2 gigs of, not to turn this into a Google commercial, but if you want 2 gigs of data, then I think it's an extra $10. So I just thought, well, I'm going to start with one and just see how that goes, because I usually just download stuff, PDFs, and read them and play games.
Yeah, sure.
So I don't want to admit that. I do play games on that phone. So anyway, but that's what I did. And then the only other thing is on Tuesday, I did give a presentation to the to SemiBug, which is a Southeast Michigan BSD user group, and that was a lot of fun. It was on GhostBSD, so it was really an elaboration of the review that I did back in, I think it was October.
Okay.
So I had slides, and I had my BSD system up and running, and no sound, but I still don't have sound, and I know it's the HDMI issue, and I'll try to sort that out eventually. So.
Yeah. You should just get a new laptop.
You know, I've thought about that. I've thought about that. So, but anyway, so that's kind of what I did.
All right. Very cool.
All right. Who's next?
I guess I'll go.
Okay, go ahead.
Stuff. No, I don't know. We had power issues in my house. Lights were flickering and stuff. And it had been kind of happening ever since we moved in. But it would only happen.
That 20 servers
once,
you started up, or was that?
It would happen like once, maybe once a day, just a blip, blip. And then all of a sudden one day it was just blip, 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 all like not lights going out. It's just they would flicker.
Can you say that again? No, just kidding. Really?
Yeah, so we had to call our utility out. You know,
who's your utility down here?
DTE.
Oh, okay. That's mine too.
Yeah, DTE for both gas and electric.
Mm-hmm. See how your gas is going down? Your gas, cost of gas?
I wasn't paying attention.
Well, it has.
That's awesome.
Ours has gone down $50.
Wow.
So. That's due in part to the commodity collapse. But anyway, okay, I digress. Go back.
Anyway, so they actually took the wires off the side of the house and replaced that plug.
Mm-hmm.
And then, or I don't know whether it was like where the meter plugs in or something. They did it during the day when I wasn't here.
Okay.
I came home and all my clocks were blinking at me.
Oh yeah.
And then it was, and like 4 days later, it started happening again. So they went to the pole and replaced it at the pole, it's been good since.
Good.
Yeah.
Wow.
Power issues are so annoying.
Oh yeah.
It's funny. I was joking. I mean, you go, as we've had it before, someone knocking the lines down, and it's like you go from living a normal life to a third world country. Like nothing works.
Yeah. Exactly. Nothing was shutting off. It's just like, you know, so it was probably missing, you know, out of 60 hertz, it was probably missing, you know,
it's one phase,
10 of them or
one
something.
One leg of the phase was missing.
Oh.
There's three that come in and I split it, but if one phase breaks, we had that happen in my office too, so.
Oh, yeah.
It's not fun.
Right.
Servers hate it.
Yeah. And, well, my computers never shut off. Well, they shut off when they actually cut the power. But my UPS was going crazy while it was happening.
Oh, it was beeping like crazy, right?
It would beep, and then it would be like fine, and then beep, and then be fine. And it happened for so long that it actually drained the battery completely, and it wouldn't run.
Well, how much time do you have on that battery, your UPS battery? Because mine is like 15 to 20 minutes, which I've never tested, because whenever I've lost power, I just go and I
shut things down
in orderly fashion.
Yeah, it's a 1200, so it's like over a half hour. I typically get it with it, but yeah, I mean, it was I just went to power my PC back on after that, and it wouldn't even power on. It went to the fail state, and so I just unplugged it and plugged in the power strip. So if you're looking in the video right behind me, there's a big power strip running up the side of the cabinet.
Right there.
Yeah, that's what my computer's plugged into now. Yeah.
We were pointing into the air trying to make that match.
Yeah.
Well, good to hear it's back to normal now.
Yeah. So that's my exciting stuff for the last week and a half or so. Right. So, Tom.
So,
regale us with your tales of tech.
I was laughing because we started doing some analysis of my website traffic and breaking it down in some more detail. I look at it from time to time, and then sometimes I do some analysis, and I couldn't figure out why.
Wow, the Russian bots were,
that's what I was just assuming, and that's what I was looking up. She's looking over my shoulder, seeing all the Russian stuff I was looking at. What we're doing is, out of 17,000 unique visitors over the last 6 months, it turns out 2,000 of them were Russian. And I was assuming they're bots, but that seems like a lot of bots. Turns out they like firewalls. Russians like pfSense, so they're landing on my pfSense page.
The reason why I said that is because yesterday, my community association just unveiled a new website, and it's based on WordPress, and they've got some other things going on with it, but they're using Google Analytics to kind of take a look at it, and they were commenting on that Russia has been hitting the site.
Yes.
And that's what prompted me when you were saying that, evaluating.
There is a good percentage of Russian bots.
Yeah.
Russia doesn't trust Google or any American firewalls, closed source. That's one of the reasons they like the open source ones. But yeah, there's a percentage of that too. They have a lot of their own services, including the chat services they use and things like that. They're very separate from there. I'm sure I remember the name of the chat program they used that was developed in Russia. Google's made them several obscenely big offers for them, and they won't sell. They really like their autonomy and independence. It's not about the money. They don't like to be part of American companies.
Yeah.
So they have that. I don't know if it's xenophobic or if it's previous fear, but they kind of like to be very independent with the way they communicate. So I think, is it Telegram that's Russian? It's one of the big ones that it's completely unpopular here, but it's popular around the rest of the world due to the fact that it is, I believe it's an open source project too, but it's not American based.
That's kind of like the metric system. It's popular around the world, but not popular here.
It's only used here in science and in drug transactions.
Oh.
So law enforcement drug dealers are the only people really using metrics.
Right.
That should tell you.
Anyways, so besides the Russian analysis, lots of little things going on. We're working on a new YouTube channel with some friends.
Cool.
Going complete comedy. I wanted to do something completely different.
Comedy.
So, yes.
Oh my gosh.
I have a couple of friends that are really funny, but they're not as savvy on some of the production side. I'm already producing YouTube videos, so that was like our little side project.
Yeah, we
want to laugh. And that's the whole thing. And when we get together, we laugh. I'm like, why don't we just record this and share some of the ideas and little skits we act out?
What kind of humor?
Knock-knock
jokes?
Oh, yeah. It's really all over the place. We even have some ideas where we're going to be, because a few of them work at Wayne State, the college university, and we're going to sit up there and pretend we made products and ask people what they think of absurd things. Things like that. It's because I got a couple of guys that just can do the most deadpan humor. Like they can not crack a smile and ask you the most absurd question. And seriously, it's just, so we have a couple ideas.
Well, that should be fun.
Yeah. And that's why they're so fun to hang out with, because you can't ever tell if they're joking, So he's actually a stand-up comedian. He's been doing the stand-up comedian track for a while, so that's actually his hobby.
Okay.
He's a database analyst by day, but stand-up comedian by night.
Wow.
So, yeah, he's great. He's actually working on his master's in communication right now. It's like he's got all this education and everything, but he can't help himself at night. It's like, let's see how funny we can be.
Yeah.
That's funny.
Yeah.
So that's my little side project. Nothing super new and exciting, more school business analysis. But I did have a thought that I wanted to throw out there. And I said, and I actually threw this out to a couple of the classmates that are at least familiar with software development. I said, I'm a big advocate of open source, part of the reason I'm even sitting here.
I'm shocked.
You're shocked. but when I'm done, I'm going to publish all of my business plan as part of my website, like a lot of the detail on there. And the reason why is it's kind of the open source concept of the The business plan is the framework that drives our business. Not the numbers, not the statistics, but the framework and driving things we do internally and externally. And like, you know, how our plans are going. And I thought, you know, I'll share that because the reality is anyone could copy it to do it. And I'm perfectly fine with that. If someone else says, you know what, that's a cool, cause I could put a lot of ideas and thoughts on how I'm running my business.
So we're just going to compete with Tom Lawrence once we read
it. They can if they want. I'm already doing a little bit of that when I share on my YouTube videos and I share how I do things or processes we use. I'm like, why not just put it all out there? Because that's part of what I'm doing in this class is publishing a really strong business plan. Cause I kind of started my company with, I want to go fix computers and charge people money. And it's like, that's it. That's my business plan. And I've managed to survive 16 years and make a living with that.
Yeah. And a pretty good one.
Yeah. I think so. You know, I'm going to structure it a little bit and I figured I'll give it all away when I'm done.
Well, you know, the thing of it is, and I'm prompted to think about, you know, in the world of finance and financial markets and stuff, people's approach to the markets and how they engage the markets, their trading plan, what have you. There are people that will put that information out there, but what doesn't go with it is the mental approach to it.
Yeah.
Things like discipline, things like, those kinds of things that are really inherent in the person are not included because it's, you know, it's just a piece of paper with words on it. So somebody may get that plan that they may get your
execution
business plan.
Execution is everything.
But the execution of it, the customer service,
And you take
those
someone,
things are really the intangibles are what I think really make the difference.
And you look at someone like Elon Musk, he's released and offers for free all the patents to all the different rocket ships he's made to the, I mean, this guy launches things into space. He invented a company and in a matter of years, that, if you didn't notice, they landed the rockets. I don't know if you've seen that.
The one that fell over?
Well, they had that one, too.
Okay, yeah, I saw
they
that
landed
one.
And
that's the only one I remember.
Yeah.
It's the failures I remember.
Yeah. Well, you know, it was just fun to watch all those, too, because they talk about them.
It was kind of painful, though, because it's not like it just went whack fast. It just slowly went
slowly
over, and you just thought, oh, my God, this is not going to end well.
It was just slightly out of balance.
Yes.
Some ice, I think it was an ice issue or something.
Something. Like but, that. You know, it's they're doing some amazing stuff and he gives it all away because it comes down to execution. He talks about that in his book, which I read. And Google released their book on HR and, it gives an in-depth look of Google's hiring process, the way they do things. And it's unlike any other company on the planet. No one does HR this way.
Yeah.
And they allowed the whole book to be published and Google's answer for why was really great. They said, you know, part of our vision is, you know, to make the world a better place. We figure by sharing how we do things, this could improve HR at other companies and increase the world's knowledge overall. So we gave away all the years of research they put into this to come up with their HR process and then gave it all away in a book, which is kind of interesting.
Yeah.
And they're not publishers of the book. They let a third party person come in and detail who actually used to work for Google, write the whole book.
Huh.
So pretty clever.
Yeah. Very good.
Yeah.
All right. Well, wow, Tom. Once again, we're just impressed with what you do during the week. You just put me to shame, I got to say.
It's not that exciting.
Well, you make it sound exciting, I have to tell you.
I watched a documentary, too, and my wife's just like, why do you just, and like, I wake up at 5 every morning, and sometimes it's like, oh, got to turn on this documentary to watch. And she gets up, gets coffee, what are you doing? Why are you, never mind. I rewatched Revolution OS, and I'm sure at least a handful of our listeners have seen it. You've probably seen it.
Is that a documentary?
Yeah, I've seen it.
Revolution OS?
Yes. It's about
I have not. Is it on Netflix or where is it on YouTube?
It's YouTube for free.
Okay.
It's the history of Linux.
Really?
Or open source.
Or open source. I should say
yeah,
open source.
Because it starts
Linux.
Before Linux.
Yes.
Yeah.
So if I just type in Revolution OS,
you'll find it.
I'll find it. Okay.
It's interesting. It's a little dated. I really would love that they made a second one because there's so much more to the story that's happened since that one came out. But I mean, it's got
I thought I heard they were working on something like that.
Yeah, it never got published. If you Google it, you'll find like people talking about it, but it never came together. Great interviews of Richard Stallman, and, I want to call him the hot sauce guy because his name's completely eluding me. He shows up at PenguinCon every year. Wrote the Cathedral and the Bazaar.
Eric
Raymond.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, he's in
the
it.
The hot
yeah,
sauce
he's
guy.
In it.
I didn't know him by that.
Yeah, I didn't know about it.
First time I got to meet him in person, he had a room party at PenguinCon and eating hot sauce, and he really likes hot sauce.
Oh.
So we were eating spicy salsa and talking about open source and all kinds of. He's a great guy.
That's funny.
Okay, that is funny.
That's why I said hot sauce guy. I don't know why that came to my head.
No, well,
hey.
The Cathedral and the Bazaar is what triggered me. So.
Yes.
Yeah.
Great read. So.
You know, I don't have that book. I probably could download it from somewhere.
You can.
Okay.
Just Google Cathedrals and Bazaar or Eric Raymond, you'll find it published.
Okay.
Yeah, I doubt there's going to be DRM on that.
There's no DRM on that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, good. I will have to do that.
I like because they have the interview in there of Stallman when he's so much younger. We look because it's, you know, it's a while and his hair's not quite as wild.
Yeah.
I like Stallman. He's.
The previous occupant of that seat didn't like him.
Right.
But he's got his opinions.
He is opinionated. But he's right to be opinionated, I guess.
But in his last interview, someone said, he almost walked out of an interview or something. I remember reading this. It's because someone started calling it Linux, and he constantly corrected GNU Linux. GNU Linux. You can't just say Linux around him. You have to prefix mm-hmm. it with GNU.
Yes.
He's very insistent.
Yes. I mean, technically, he's right.
Yeah.
So.
Well, come on. We like to...
Unless you're just talking about the kernel, then you can say Linux.
Yes. All right, let's get into the show.
All right. Yeah.
All right.
All right, so we're going to move on to...
Listener feedback.
We want to hear from you. Call 734-258-7009 or email show@smlr.us with your feedback and questions.
And it just occurs to me that I haven't fixed these sound bites, so that probably played twice.
Oh, bonus.
Anyway, so listener feedback. I saw we had two different things come in. One was from, I don't know how to say his name.
Brad.
Dave. There it is. Dave.
And Brad.
He said he had issues with, our feed isn't validating correctly. So I'll have to look into that. I haven't had time to look at it.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is Budgie. He said, as a Brit, he agrees that the word, the bird name is commonly used here, as the full form is budgeteer or no.
Something I can't budgerarier? Pronounce.
Yeah.
There's a reason it's called budgie.
Yeah.
Right.
Because budgerariers.
Is, yeah. Even looking at the word, it's hard to say.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. Yep. So that, so that was good to get that. I get a kick out of that. And then we also got something, actually it was pretty lengthy from Brad,
yes.
Brad Alexander, and it is not, my replies to Brad are showing up on my webmail client, but the original email, no, this is my response. See that?
And if you expand that out, will it show his?
Oh.
Uh-huh.
I'm so embarrassed. Oh, my God. Thanks, Tony.
Sorry.
Thanks for helping me out with my webmail. yes, I did expand this, and it's actually pretty lengthy. I mean, he talks about, he actually put PCBSD on, I think his wife's computer, at least one of the computers in his home. I think it was his wife's computer. And, I think he's having a pretty good experience with it so far, anyway. And, And the impetus for that was the whole systemd thing. He's not happy with that and
the way
it's being kind of forced on people. You know, and my take on it is kind of Red Hat is sort of being like Microsoft. They're being like the Microsoft of the Linux world where they're just enforcing their standards on everybody.
I'd say they have the right to do it for their own system.
Oh, they do.
And if other people follow, then.
Yeah, you're right.
Are they following because that's the better solution?
Yeah.
You know, or is it because it's going to be better supported now that Red Hat's doing it and that's one of the primary, like, business?
Yeah, well, I think what Brad's take was, you know, he didn't want to, they're just, I guess updates sometimes will break things or just create problems. And so he just didn't want to deal with that. And so he also, you know, the fact that with PCBSD, although it's... available only in 64-bit and defaults to ZFS, and that's the reason why. He likes the fact that he's going to get that natively with PCBSD. So he went on to talk about a little bit about some of the things there. You know, there's Life Preserver in PCBSD, which lets you it allows you to create backups. And I believe that they use ZFS to create these snapshots in the Life Preserver utility. So he, you know, again, he went, he's pretty lengthy.
He is a little bit in depth.
Yeah, so yeah. I'm not gonna kind of go through everything here, but I'll come back to it maybe next episode, talk a little bit more about some of these things, the snapshots and all of that. So it's pretty pretty lengthy, in-depth post or letter to us, email to us.
Yeah, yeah. And then there's also a good comparison, and we could probably share the link where they break down the comparison between the ZFS and the Hammer.
Oh, yeah, one of the forums, I think, was FreeBSD forum.
And someone's got, you know, the good, the bad, the way the licensing works, the way the snapshots are created, problems with databases on there. So a lot of good information. It's in-depth. And, you know, especially if you're doing any enterprise planning, this is huge. If you're going, okay, this is the structure I'm going to build on, you know, this is really important.
I agree.
All right, so we had that email.
Yep, that's all I saw. Did you guys see anything else come through?
No, spam. I think that was spam.
Right.
Did you read it?
No, I didn't. Was it sensical or was it something crazy?
It's nonsensical.
It was talking about sport ball.
Yeah.
Oh, I saw that. I did laugh and I thought, oh, we should just.
It's got like every buzzword. It's got Windows 8 and quarterbacks. And I'm just like, you're reading it going, it's like the most random chained together sentences.
Yeah, but it's, but you would look it's at timely that, not, though.
Well, you wouldn't think it's spam.
You wouldn't. And the timeliness of the sport ball or the football and all of that because of the football playoffs here in the U.S., kind of puts it outside of that realm. And I'm looking at it thinking, what? What are they trying to say here?
I did too. I read it. I'm like, okay, I'll read it because they sent it to the show.
That's
I'm
about
like,
2 minutes I'm never going to get back in my life.
I'm like, football and Windows 8? Where's the connection?
What? Yeah.
Right.
Well, you want to punt. You just want to punt it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Punt Windows 8. There we go.
Although that has a different meaning, I think, in Britain. Punt.
Oh, probably.
It does.
We'll get an email.
A punter is someone who, I think, sells things. I'm sure our Brit listeners will help us out with that. And probably Google will, too. But anyway, so. But yeah, that was our other feedback. Kind of. Okay, well.
All right. I guess we're going on to Distro Fever.
Distro Fever, where we cover the latest hot distro releases and news.
And so I'm looking through the list, and there was a couple good things on there. You know, Gparted was updated, and Zorin is updated. No, they're about to update. It's development right now.
You know, the one that really caught my eye was Kali.
Yeah.
Because this particular release of Kali, it has shifted now. I mean, it's still based on Debian, but it's shifted from being in sync with Debian's release schedule and using their various versions to being a rolling release.
Yes.
And I went ahead and installed it, actually, and I'm contemplating doing a review of it for our next Linux review if I don't do Dragonfly BSD. But what I noticed about it, and anybody who follows Google Plus probably saw the link to the Kali Linux cookbook. I went ahead and gave them all the information they needed so I could get the free download. So I downloaded it. Now, that cookbook is copyright 2013, so it's 3 years old. So it's a couple of versions ago. But it's interesting to see that now the repository for Kali Linux is just the Kali Linux repository, where before it was syncing up with the Debian repositories because it was based on Debian testing and that type of thing. So that was one of the big changes that I noticed. The other thing too.
It's based on.
It's a rolling.
It's a rolling release. Yeah.
Yes. It still uses the apt-get package manager, and it's still, I think, based on Debian overall, but not their releases.
Well, I thought it was based on Ubuntu for some reason. Somebody told me that in the past.
No, and the nice thing with the rolling release, I'm pretty sure a big driver for that is you need the latest penetration testing tools because the vulnerabilities are rolling release.
Yeah,
right.
You know, and you guys, when you've listened to my distro reviews, and I've talked about the Broadcom chip and some of the little hoops I have to jump through, it was very interesting because when I was installing Kali Linux, it noted I'm actually half doing my review. It noted that some firmware was missing, and it identified, I think, three different files, and I could tell by the file name, I inferred that that was Broadcom related. Well, what was interesting is once the install completed, I had wireless internet. So I don't know, it was kind of magic to me how that, they said I needed it, but they must have been on the CD or the DVD already, because I created an ISO.
No, yeah.
Oh, you know, the other thing too is that you log in as root. And it was so funny because I was working on that. I was doing some other stuff and I was just installing. So then when it came to reboot, it gave me the login screen. I'm thinking, oh wow, what username did I create? I drew a blank because I didn't create one. So then I ended up logging in using the root credentials, and sure enough, I got right in.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, it was kind of interesting. So yeah. That was just something else that caught my eye. But as I said, that my next review, I'm going to kind of do a combination of the Kali cookbook, a review of that cookbook in conjunction with the latest release of Kali Linux. So just kind of see how accurate the recipes are. I did find a couple of recipes that are probably out of date just because of the shift in Kali Linux itself. You know, one thing I didn't know, through my ignorance, I'll confess, is that when you're talking about Linux headers, I thought it was some kind of meta information about the Linux, you know, the Linux
not
kernel.
For the kernel.
It's the source.
Yeah, it's the source code for that.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
I'm embarrassed
that's why
to say.
There's a lot of things that if it requires recompiling parts of the kernel, you know, modules or something, then it requires the headers also, because it needs to be able to grab.
I remember
source
doing
code from
that.
Yeah.
Yeah. See, and I didn't put. I just knew that it needed these files, these header files, and I thought it was just some metadata about the kernel or something. And so I would dutifully download those, and whatever I was working on would successfully complete. But I just didn't put that.
VirtualBox needs that when you install it. It always needs headers because it has a bunch of kernel modules it has to add.
Oh,
yeah. And that's
okay.
Probably where you saw it before, Mary.
I bet it was.
The DKMS.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep, I remember that. That's exactly right.
Yeah.
God, Tony, you have a better memory than I do.
At times.
you remember my mind better than I do. But yeah, that's what it was. I remember DKMS.
Yeah,
it was about 5-6 years ago when I was fooling around with that.
Yeah, I remember using VirtualBox before DKMS, or before I heard of it, and I had to go through and recompile those modules.
You had to add them yourself.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there was a script that somebody set up, said, run this. Whenever you do an update to VirtualBox, now you have to run this.
Yeah. To re-add the stuff. That was kind of a pain. Yeah. I'm glad it's automated now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh. You know, our friend Carl Miller?
Yeah.
He had
friend
a big
show,
script.
Carl. Yeah.
Yeah. He had a big script that he just set it to run at boot so that it would test. And if there was no changes, then it would just continue on.
Mm-hmm.
That way he never had to deal with it. He could do an update the next time he reboots, then it does it all
just
for him.
Check it. Oh, yeah. Nice.
Yep.
Yep.
Cool.
Smartest man in the room. That's what I used to say when he would, remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because Carl, he's just smart guy, much smarter than I. So anyway, but yeah, that's, you know, as far as which Linux distro on the list caught my eye, that Kali did. So, and because I had seen that Kali cookbook kind of come out, I thought, hey, let's take a look. So
yeah, and you know, another one looks interesting is that Android x86, but it's still back on the 4.4 version.
Yeah, I don't know why they can't get, you know, the Android open source project has a later release. I guess there's some difficulties in building that.
Porting it to a PC.
Yeah. And I guess I don't know what kind of manpower they have to help out with that. But
well, you remember,
they said it is likely the last one of the 4.4 series.
You remember I installed that a couple years ago and talked about it.
Oh yeah?
No, yeah, actually, because it looked like, and it was funny, and I remember saying this, because I got it installed on, I think it wasn't this laptop, it was another one I had, and it looked like a big Android phone.
Yeah.
I mean, just that screen on
That's
my,
funny.
Yeah, it was kind of funny, pick up my computer and put it up to my ear. Hello?
But, right.
So, maybe we'll take a look at that too.
All right.
Okay.
So that's what I saw interesting.
Yeah, it was kind of a short list, actually. It's probably just the hangover from the holidays.
They have release candidate 1, for which is at 5.1 Android, available if you go right to their website.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
So it's in RC.
Oh, RC, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Which means it's almost ready to go.
But it's kind of cool. They have a virtual box image you can download and play with it. So very cool.
Yeah. All right. So we're going on to the news, right?
Yes. Tony's lost his soundbite.
I did.
Tony's lost his mind. See, you're so busy remembering my mind that
You know what? I think I removed it thinking I was going to fix it, and I never fixed it.
Oh, yeah.
Anyway, all right. So news coming up next.
Beep, yeah.
Beep, 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 beep.
Insert typewriter sounds.
Clickety-clack. All right. So what do we got, gentlemen? What do we got for news items that kind of caught our eye?
Well, I'll let you guys go first, as normal. First.
All right.
All right. Well,
yeah, you go first, Tom, and then I'll pick up whatever you don't cover.
40net.
I'll pick up the crumbs.
They were in the news.
Who?
40net. They make your big iron corporate routers.
Fortinet.
That's how I know. I call them. I'm sure it's probably said differently.
Yeah.
Tweet me if I'm wrong.
Is Debian their underlying OS? No, just kidding.
Right. So it was
giving you a hard time.
First, they got in trouble for not disclosing something they patched. So they patched something silently. I think it was 2014.
Because it would have embarrassed them?
Probably. That's a lot of times. It was a hard-coded SSH in there. But they found out that this hard-coded user password SSH was also still included, but obscured in the latest version as well. And basically what we're talking about is hard-coded backdoors to these.
Yes.
They're saying it's for administrative purposes. The NSA's administration? I mean,
which, right.
Because if the reality is the administrators aren't handed this backdoor information, and why would you ever hard code some type of login on these? This is just, that's a ridiculous thought.
How can companies trust any of these, not just them, but any of these, Juniper,
and Juniper handled it better. Because Juniper's answer was, we don't know who put this in here. Fortinet's going, it's an admin thing. Well, that's, no.
Yeah.
Please reveal.
Juniper lied better. No, just kidding.
Yeah, Juniper lied better. We don't know how they got there. Wink, nod. Looking at you, government.
Yeah.
But this goes back to why Russians are hitting my website for PFSense.
It's got to be vetted by the, and that's what's awesome about PFSense is because it's vetted by the open source community. And I mean, just as you're saying that, I was reading another article that Cisco has flaws, critical flaws that they just fixed. And it says it's hard-coded passwords for root.
Yeah. Why would there ever be these hard-coded passwords? I don't get it. That's a horrible idea.
Well, no wonder the Chinese have eaten our dessert because
they have our password.
Yeah.
You're right.
There's a good little read I did on LibreOffice 5.1 coming out here, and one of the things he did, as I start using 5 more, and I don't use it a lot, but I had to do a bunch of spreadsheets analysis, and I do all this in LibreOffice. They really have come a long way, and the UI looks a lot nicer. Mm-hmm. And in 5.1, they have the human interface guidelines, which they have published on there, that they're following, and they're going to be doing a lot of really nice UI tweaks in 5.1. So they're really, which is nice because a lot of open source projects, I won't lie, they suffer from being ugly.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Tom, because one thing comes to mind, when you've got a little dialog box and you've got an okay and a cancel, do you ever notice how sometimes they're switched?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not the only one, and it kind of bugs me. I'm thinking there's kind of a generally accepted order for those, and there's some projects that just don't.
Yeah. And if you come up with some standards, and they have like a whole, really good design standards. I like they had at the bottom a little too long, didn't read. The main menus were changed to improve usability with the goal of consistency, clarity, and complementedness. So try us out and let us know what you think. That's on their page for their new design. So they have a whole bunch of design principles they're following so they can keep consistency across the entire platform from Writer to Calc to all their different products.
Yeah, that's important. I mean, when you take a look at, another large office suite comes to mind.
That don't listen to their users and create these weird little things called ribbons. And
everyone goes, the ribbon.
What the hell is that?
Yeah, that ribbon. Yeah. Oh my God.
So
it's horrible. But
one of the clients he had, I really like when Microsoft made the change, they really looked at different platforms because she had calculated out she had a lot of people who used
Microsoft?
Excel. Yeah, we'll make software to change. The business owner says, you know, if each of my employees spend this many minutes trying to find the print button or what they move, you know, some of the different common parts they moved, I lose this much efficiency over this much time. And the average, I mean, she understood how long it would take for the retraining of them to start realizing where things are. But that's such an efficiency loss from a business standpoint.
Yeah.
And bad UI design is just, it's always a problem.
Mm-hmm.
And I do like the way that for Ubuntu, people didn't like it at first, but the fact that you can, in any program, you can hit Alt and type out and hit the, find the menus you're looking for without actually going through the menus. Everyone knows that's a nice Ubuntu feature, but it goes back to usability for the end users and getting them.
Oh, Alt app and your file thing will drop down and they can use your keyboard to do it.
Just Alt. Yeah.
Yeah, just Alt will bring up the menu where you can start typing.
Yeah. See, and it actually, it'll find all the stuff. Hey, anyone using Ubuntu, press Alt when you're in any program, and it'll actually list out all the different functions, so you can actually search for them.
Of the current program you're in.
Of the current program you're in.
And then if you hit Windows, the super key, and you can start typing, it'll bring up programs or things that are related to that.
Well, I just want you to know, pressing Alt in Chrome in GhostBSD just gave me my menu, which I'm very happy about, so.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, my life is complete today.
Yes.
Yes, I get that. Because I'm just a creature of habit. I like having the little menu where I can.
Open source ad blocking web browser, and I believe they received $2.5 million in funding to get this going. You have the,
That's revenue lost to ads.
Yes. Well, they realize there's a big market demand for this, but the company has an interesting approach. They're going to do a thing. I believe it's called the Brave browser. Mm-hmm. The guy is the big boss, Eik. Elitch from, he's formerly of Mozilla. Anyways, he's forming this web browser, open source platform, and they're doing a partnership type thing with ad companies. So it's ad blocking, but they'll allow certain ads to come through and want to do the concept is a revenue share. So only ads that are not bad can come through. So they can say, okay, these are ads that are acceptable. They're not obtrusive. So they want to work out a deal because they realize sites are ad funded. Ad block solution of blocking everything is one extreme of that. There's got to be some happy middle we can come to where I go, we're accepting of ads as paying for things. It's a proven business model, but these guys are going overboard. And Forbes just had a big whoopsie on something. They had a pop under that was a malicious phishing ad.
Oh, geez.
And they just didn't know the company they contracted to serve ads was serving it on their site. And if you turn ad block on, you can't view their site. It'll actually block their site and says, please remove your ad blocker so you can see our site.
Oh.
And I think they, if I'm not mistaken, the irony was it was an article about ad blocking.
Oh, my gosh.
And
that
it had an
funny
ad that was serving up maliciousness. So,
wow.
Yeah. And that's the problem. It's like, get rid of the malicious ads and there'll be a problem. Get rid of these, you know, hover over pop overs and pop unders that fish and scam. And Yeah.
You know, I try to think about ads that are of use to me, and clearly if I'm reading an article, I have some interest in the article. So if the ads are, if they're informative, although I have to admit when I see the word sponsored, I always think, it's an ad, I'm not clicking on it. But there's got to be a way for vendors or people who advertise to have their information seen. I think providing useful stuff to people.
Right. Then it's one thing to have ads that are related to the page you go to, but when it starts, like Amazon ads pop up from what you were searching for 2 days ago, that gets kind of annoying.
Yeah.
You know, although I do agree that ad supported web is an important thing, and you know, so blocking all ads are not good, but you have to block the malicious and the annoying ads.
And there's a lot of that in between there.
Yeah.
So that's my other little piece of news, and I tweeted about this because I was angry at Google, and it took them, I think, 3 or 4. Today is the first time I noticed it fixed, and it wasn't fixed as of yesterday. Google, if you search things, you have the snippets that come up, which are, so you don't have to go to the website. It's like that display information that comes up in the Google results page.
Mm-hmm.
So if I type in, like, someone's birthday of any, you know, celebrity, it usually will just give you their birthday information without there. You can also search things like phone numbers.
Yes.
And so if you were to type in QuickBooks telephone support number, which obviously I actually typed it into Google it because Intuit did a release and the wonderful terrible world of software, it creates lots of revenue for us. They did an update. It broke lots of my client stuff. So I had to call the support people, which the quick snippet of the solution was to do something that's not under support, which actually tells you implicitly not to do. And the guy's support answer why it's not in our knowledge base to do that. And he says, well, every previous version, you should never make this setting change, but in this version, you should. And I'm like,
really?
Yeah. Well, I said, I did, you know, this is enterprise QuickBooks that this company pays $9,000 a year for. So you're not talking about just the average consumer one. So these problems were pretty, yeah. Anyways, but what came up was Google had a scam website that came up for the phone number. And I right away, I actually dialed the number, but right away realized it wasn't QuickBooks. So the first thing the enterprise company support wants to know is, what's your license number? Because they won't give you support unless you pay. And they have a paid support contract. So the first, how can I help you? Where it's Intuit. Let's get the support going. Give me your license number. This guy was from, foreign accent, and right away wanted to get on my computer and everything else. So I said, oh, you work for Intuit? And he says, yes, we're the Intuit support. And I have the number written down. I'm going to call it again and do one of the, I've done these before. I've done videos on how these scammers will lie to you.
Troll them. Yeah.
And I troll them. But
I love when that happens. Oh my gosh.
But what they do is, the ultimate scam is to get money from you. But what made me so angry is that Google has this number coming up in a snippet.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the first actual clickable search result is the, page for Intuit, their /about-us support phone number. So the results are correct, but the snippet's wrong. And the way these guys got the snippet wrong, I don't know how Google decided to pull this. And Google does not have a good way to report this. The snippet was because someone took an old Mozilla plugin and changed the verbiage to say QuickBooks support telephone number out of a Mozilla plugin. So they changed the description of what the actual plugin was. The plugin, because it was compromised, was deleted by Mozilla. So Google had a cached copy of the page they pulled the number from. And because of this, there's no way for Google has a bad link reporting system. I couldn't use it because the link was broken and didn't work. So there's not a way to report it as a bad link.
So you need somebody inside Google to do it, right?
So Matt Cutts does a lot of different interviews and stuff like that. So I tweeted to him and Google support. They have a Google search support on Twitter. And I had a screenshot of what happened and I drew a little circle on it. I said, this is a scam phone number and an arrow that says this is the right phone number. And
Matt Cutts, you said he's
the guy who keeps Google safe. He's the one who does the releases, and he's very accessible. He does videos and things like that. He's taking a short leave from Google right now, but he's still involved. You can't not work there.
Right.
In the tech world, you can't really take a vacation and not still be plugged into work in some way.
So, nonetheless, he tweeted back right away, and he CC'd some people, I guess, that were tagged him.
So they're
going
to hire you?
No. Yeah. But it still disappointed me that I think this happened on, Tuesday or Wednesday, and it was not fixed as of yesterday. I did look, it is fixed this morning. But I mean, you're sending everyone for a nationally recognized product, QuickBooks, that most small businesses use.
I'm surprised QuickBooks didn't tell them.
They commented too that they did. Because when I tweeted, I also CC'd QuickBooks, and Intuit replied faster than Matt Cutts and Google did to say that. Well, they gave me a generic canned response. I think theirs was automated, but at least they...
Yeah, thank you for emailing us.
Pretty much.
We'll review it and get back to you as needed.
Yeah.
And I did it on Twitter for public, and it's not that I was trying to embarrass them. I just didn't want it to go to dead air. It's too critical of a thing.
Yeah.
Think about how many people type in every day QuickBooks help and support phone number, and I don't know how long it was coming up for. I just know when I seen it.
Mm-hmm.
So... Mm-hmm. Anyways.
Although, the thing of it is there may be a little help button inside the product itself, too, which might have mitigated, but you're right, Tom, still, that should not come up as the first one.
And to that point, this is something we get frequently, and someone else came yesterday and they were a personal friend of mine, they had a problem with their Lexmark printer, they Googled Lexmark printer support, and they called the first number that came up, and it was a scammer who loaded some crap
with a heavy Indian accent?
Yep. She thought she called Lexmark, and then she showed me the number, and I showed her Lexmark's number. She had done it on her cell phone, and I said, yeah, here's the proof. She goes, no, they swear they said they're from Lexmark, and I couldn't convince her otherwise until she showed me her phone, showed me the phone number. She called with her cell phone, and I showed her the actual Lexmark number, and I said, see how they're different numbers? She goes, okay, I believe you now. Not to mention the guy installed some crap on there that kept popping up that wanted to insist on paying money. We just uninstalled it. It wasn't a big deal.
Right. Wow. That's crazy.
Yeah, there's so much of that scamming out there. It's a shame.
Yeah.
That's the bigger part. There's also the EFF has looks like it's a new book that they're promoting, and it's really interesting. As I'm you know, his writings are interesting is Aaron Swartz. It's celebrating his life in words. It's called The Boy Who Could Change the World. Take some time to read his story. It's a great story of everything he that led up to an unfortunate story of him releasing information that led ultimately to prosecutor overstep and unfortunately caused him, he said it was the reason for his suicide in a note he left. But the book is interesting. Aaron Swartz has really influenced the internet and a lot of different things in the open source. And I think he's the guy who coined or said the phrase, information doesn't want to be free. Information doesn't want to be anamorphized. he had a lot of good writings and a lot of, interesting thoughts on why, on open source and in that kind of, world. So that's what I have for news.
Thanks, Tom.
Yeah.
I have a couple of items, and then once we're done with the news, we can shift to KDE Corner and Linux convention scene.
Oh, yeah.
But I wanted to mention, I think we've talked about this, from time to time, the long enduring suit between Google and, Oracle on the whole Java.
Yeah.
Google's use of the Java API, alleged use, since that case is ongoing. And, apparently, well, as part of the legal process, and this was because I was in the, you know, legal, industry, at least, you know, my company did business with law firms and corporate legal departments, several of my companies. Anyway, there's a process by which, the lawyers from both sides receive documents from the opposing party, to help with their case development. And that process is called discovery. So apparently, Google had provided some information to Oracle's attorneys, and this information, it can be quote-unquote classified so that it's for attorneys' eyes only because it's very sensitive, it's confidential information. Well, apparently, information that had been provided by Google to Oracle regarding Google's revenue was blurted out in court.
Whoops.
Yeah. Well, yes, by one of Oracle's lawyers. So, and one of the revenue numbers was, the fact that, I think Google made, well, first of all, did you know that Google, and this was also blurted out, that Google paid Apple last year, I think, $1 billion in order to be the default search engine in the iPhone and iPad, really? You know, their ecosystem.
Well, yeah. It doesn't surprise me. I mean, they've done that with other.
Yeah, well, $1 billion is a lot of money.
That is a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. So that came out.
Oh, that's how Apple became the biggest, right?
Yes.
Is there about $1 billion difference between Google and Apple?
there you have it. So Apple was trying to close that gap. But anyway, or was that the other way around? But anyway, I think I have that wrong. Although the way the market's going, who knows? But anyway, the, apparently Google has made $31 billion in revenue since, 2008 when Android was released. And of that, $22 billion of it was profit. So those closely guarded secrets, again, were blurted out in court. So Google ended up filing a motion to have that stricken from the transcript and all of that. And then that was denied by the judge. And this was in the Register, which is that very funny IT site.
I like the Register.
British IT site, yeah. And they said that Google had begged the court in the PDF to reconsider. And so now what they're doing, because they said it's highly confidential, attorney's eyes only, so now this magistrate judge is considering their latest plea to have it stricken. Well, the only problem with that is that it might be stricken from the transcript, but it is all over the web.
Yes.
So, you know, the cat is out of the bag, and there you have it. So anyway, so that was one of the news items I noted. There was another one, too, that I posted into my Google Plus stream, and that has to do with 100 classic Atari games will arrive on Steam this spring. And I don't know if you guys saw that, but
I did.
I believe that Atari had released a press release, I want to say on the 21st, so it was a few days ago, and that was picked up by PC World and was elaborated upon. So as I said in Google Plus, I foresee an immediate drop in productivity as soon as this is released.
Right.
But anyway, so things like, I think Centipede. Remember Centipede?
Oh, yes.
Did you ever play that? Oh my gosh, that was so much fun. Mm. So games like Centipede and, other similar Atari games are going to be available in this classic, release on Steam. So, it's going to be, I guess it's the Atari Vault Collection, it's called. So, fresh from the vaults of Atari. So that should be a lot of fun for those of you who are retro game fans. And I think,
relive my childhood.
Yeah. So those are a couple of, those are my two news items.
All right. I have a couple security stuff, so we can wait and do that in a minute if you want to do your KE Corner or however which way you want to do it.
Sure, KDE Corner, I can. I've got a couple of things there. I wanted to mention anybody who uses Kate will appreciate hearing this. Whoever uses Kate for any kind of development and coding and that type of thing, they just released, the maintainer has just released the Kate Perl plugin. It's up to 1.0.
So the Kate, for the non-KDE users, Kate is a text editor?
Yes. That's absolutely correct.
Okay.
But it's not just a text editor. It is probably one of the best.
Oh, really?
So they're completely unbiased, Mary, KDE fangirl. But no, it's excellent. It's an excellent text editor, and it will allow you, you know, when you use a proper markup in different programming languages, it reflects that and uses colorings and that type of thing. But anyways, nice. They've got a Perl plugin. I don't program in Perl. I can barely spell it, but anyway, so they've got a plugin available for that, and it's up to 1.0. So that usually when it hits 1.0, that's kind of a major thing.
All right.
But I wanted to mention that. And then Tom, there's something that I think you might be interested in, and this has to do with, where did I put it? Yes, here it is. Apparently, Kaden Live, they have this cafe. Have you heard of it? It's kind of an online gathering on the on the Relay Chat,
yeah.
The IRC, and they're having another one coming up. And what they're doing, it's an opportunity for Kaden Live developers and users to exchange ideas, talk about how what we want to see in the project, and how we want it to evolve, and how you can help us on that way. So anyway, they. Today, I think, is the last day to identify dates that people are available for this thing. And I think once they get that information and make a determination, then it's something I know because you're a fan of Kaden Live that, you know, if your schedule coincided with availability, it might be something.
Yeah,
that...
I have it in my IRC.
Okay.
Because I go in there and I've commented on some things and talked to some people on there. Sometimes it's funny because some of the questions people drop in there go beyond me because I don't get into some of the color grading and really esoteric detail stuff, which is important stuff when you're editing videos, when you want movie quality stuff. Mm-hmm. But for me, it's like YouTube, and I'm like, I look good enough.
It's more standard, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, but I wanted to mention that because
that
might be of interest to you.
No, it's nice. I mean, the video editing on there, and I got to think about it because I had someone ask me, and because it's a film fest, someone asked me about going to a film fest and talking about open source editing and the status of it, because it opens up a larger opportunity. As the camera market itself has become a whole lot less expensive, so you can get really high quality HD video well under $1,000. So the next step is editing all that video, and the price can be a little bit prohibitive. Just now, the cameras cost way less than the equipment it takes to record, but Kaden Live and other open source editing programs, because OpenShot just released their 2.0 beta, and it works on Mac, Windows, and Linux. And they've enhanced a lot. And I switched from OpenShot for some features it was missing. I went to Kaden Live, but it's nice to see all this open source editing coming out, because we're only going to see more ability for filmmaking and things like that for essentially if you want to call it the amateur or pro amateur market, people directly, college kids with a lesser budget, can start producing stuff. You know, and YouTube being a platform where they can place it and get bandwidth and platform, and now they have all the tools to edit it with all these open source ones. It's great.
Yeah. Cool. All right.
Cool. And then the last quick mention I'll say, you know, KDE is ported to FreeBSD, and they just released the KDE Frameworks 5.18 to Area 51, which is, which in addition to being a location in New Mexico for UFOs, is also hosted by the PCBSD, is the repository or where the KDE FreeBSD information is. So anyway, they've just released their new frameworks, or the update, frameworks 5.18. So, Just want to throw that in.
All right.
Okay.
All right, I have a few security articles. Actually, I found more than I thought I was going to talk about. But the first one is, it says, you need a password manager. And here's the list of the best ones.
Oh.
And it's on wired.com. And it goes through some of the basics of why you need one. I was listening to an HPR.
You mean my single password? You know, yeah. Well.
Well, it was Kevin O'Brien was talking about passwords, and the top security professionals all say the number, like the top three things you need to do for your security is get a password manager, have unique passwords, and have strong passwords. And all those are, you know, if you get a good password manager, the other two are taken care of. So you definitely, if you're not using one, you need to look into to, you know, switching over. And I've had a lot of people say LastPass is awesome. You know, it's really good. It's like $12 a year or something.
It's free with ad support, but yeah, $12 a year if you don't want any ads or anything. And to me, absolutely worth it. I buy.
Are they targeted ads? Do you know?
I don't think so.
Okay.
Yeah,
I don't know.
They have a pretty unobtrusive ad system. It's really basic. But they're absolutely worth the $12 a year. You also can use password sharing on there. We use it for my company.
Oh, yeah.
And it's great. The password sharing feature is really nice. I share out my accounts with my employees.
That is good.
It also lets me, if I change a password, I don't have to tell them. It just changes theirs, too, because it does all the sharing on there. It also works
for my kids. Have like a shared account that has to run the business, then you don't need to give the password to everybody.
Yes.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it also lets my kids share the Netflix password and things like that. So if anything changes, you just change it in LastPass, which is a pretty automated process, and it just shares it out to everyone delegated on that particular one. And the nice thing is the sharing is really implicit. Like it really tells you what you're doing. You can't accidentally click share. You have to each time type it in and put their email address
explicit,
in.
Explicit, right?
Yeah, that's it.
So you don't have to imply that something's happening. It tells you it's happening.
It tells you that it's happening. You can't accidentally just share out your passwords. Yeah. You have to share them specifically with someone else that has LastPass and their email address. So you can't accidentally just open it up. It doesn't have like an accidental open to the world option.
Right. That's awesome.
Make this password available to all.
Yeah, that would be a big flaw.
Yeah, no, it doesn't have any of that. So it's nice.
A couple other ones I talked about. One was called KeePass. KeePassX.
Mm-hmm. I've heard of that one.
I think it's an open source version. Similar. So it looks nice.
I used it before I switched to LastPass. That was my password manager. I really liked it because I would sync the encryption blob across my own cloud file, and so it was everywhere. It just was difficult to use because you constantly are going back and forth, copy-paste, for username and passwords. So it didn't integrate very well with browsers. It has an integration module someone wrote for Windows, so it'll integrate with Mozilla on Windows. You use Mono and try to get it to work in Linux. It just didn't work well, is what I would say. I got it kind of working. LastPass just works. KeePass is a good alternative because if you just have to keep a bunch of server or client passwords, it's a nice standalone product that is open source.
Yeah.
A lot of enterprise companies started using it for sharing amongst their IT teams.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, that's... And just like you were saying, same thing, that's how you use it.
Yeah, and it works great for them. That way they list out all the server passwords, routers, and it's really nice tree structure in it. So, like, you can break down different site locations and everything. It's got a very nice management. So it's not just a bunch of passwords thrown in a place. It breaks down, and you name all the different subtrees. Like, you can say Cisco routers for this site and have them all listed with individual passwords. And it will generate those passwords, and you can just... It makes management really nice.
That's awesome. Yeah, so then they're unique and strong. And
unique, strong. That way, because a lot of times, I imagine you guys probably you don't have to admit to it, but maybe the same password may have been used in a couple different routers.
Right.
Moving on?
Yeah, moving on. So the next one I found was, and I'm sure everybody's heard about this, but there was a vulnerability in the Linux kernel.
Yes.
The 3.8, I believe I read. And so you need to do an update now, you know, soon. Like, if you haven't done it, update.
What if I'm running BSD?
Well, then there's...
I don't have to.
That's right. So do an update.
I just had to do that. Just kidding.
Privilege escalation.
That's right, yeah. So that's it, exactly. It can escalate to root access and then do bad things on your computer. You don't want that to happen.
Mm-hmm. Ubuntu had the release amazingly fast. I want to say they were the first out the door with the patch.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, it, and I think Kubuntu drives
all
its
the,
from that.
All the derivatives and, right away.
Yeah, because I had a security update this week that
But there was another article, like a follow-up to that.
It's a beautiful thing.
Was how impressed that Ubuntu just whipped it out. I mean, they're like, we got this.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's the second part is make sure you get updated.
Well, half the Linux I'm sorry, Tony. Just a quick thing. Half the Linux ecosystem is Ubuntu derived anyway.
Yes.
Yes.
So all the more reason to do that.
Yes.
All right. Sorry, Tony.
And keep that in mind is that I found another article saying how to patch your Linux kernel. So there's it said for Debian based ones and Red Hat you do apt-get upgrade or do the yum upgrade command, and that'll do it. But there's for some of the other ones, and yeah, there's a little bit more work that you may have to do. Mm-hmm. So it went through multiple steps for SUSE, and I'm not sure how if it's what the whole process, whether this is currently up to date, but so that's another link that I have in there. And then Google also created a fix for it for the Android kernel flaws. And they're saying, it's really not as big as everybody's saying, because it only affects if you're not running or, KitKat or before. No, right. It's before KitKat. So
in other words, before KitKat, you're open to this?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So you need to try to figure out how to update it.
Right.
Right. Yeah. So that's vulnerable to it. And the problem with that is that carriers stop supporting the older phones, right. So those it's likely those will never be patched, even though Google released the patch for it. Unless you root or ROM your phone, then it's unlikely that the carrier is ever going to send out a patch for that.
Well, so but those phones may not be. I mean, they technically may be vulnerable, but if it's a phone, like for example, my Samsung S3 Galaxy, mm-hmm. Galaxy S3. As some may call it. I use that right now just as a device to drive my Bluetooth speaker. Right. And so I've got some music sites, and that's all I use it for. So what are the chances of me?
Yeah, but what if one of those music sites are running an ad that has this
I pay
it?
For it. I pay for the site. So.
Okay. Well, I mean, and maybe it's not in your case exactly.
I'm just curious just to try to...
Even though it...
But it's a good point about... phone vendors not...
Yeah. Well, I mean, and what I'm saying is actually your case is almost perfect that say it's an old phone that somebody gives to their kid,
mm-hmm.
And their kid maybe is doing the right things, but an ad pops up and it's running in the background of that ad, this attack. Well, it's not just now their phone is messed up and isn't going to work right. They can do all sorts of things on your internal network
now. I was just going to say,
they can grab your
network.
Wi-Fi passwords. They can do... jump across to other.
So
machines.
That SE Linux update that keeps showing up on my phone, do you think I should go ahead and get that on there?
Yes, I think so. They did say if you were running SE Linux on some of the older kernels that it will make it harder to attack.
All right, I'm going to accept that and do it. Okay.
All right. And the last thing I found was Symantec finds a rat. And a rat is a remote access Trojan.
Mm.
And let me go over to the article real quick. But they, it says they're targeting US, UK, and India small businesses. So it's small business and medium-sized businesses that they found these in. And it says simple things to avoid this is just make sure your antivirus and your OS is updated and patched. Because it's not using any kind of 0 days, that are, to attack your computer.
Okay.
So, or computers and servers and whatnot. So just make sure you do the updates and
do
you should
the right
be okay.
Thing. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
And that was everything I found.
Cool. Great. Well, I want to make a quick mention of something. And it's, Michael W. Lucas, who's the benevolent dictator of the, semi-bug. And, we talked a little bit about, I think we've mentioned ZFS, and for those of you who are interested in ZFS, what you really should do is go to tiltedwindmillpress.com and go buy his free BSD Mastery ZFS. It's a great book that goes into considerable detail about the ZFS operating system. And even though it's free BSD, I know that a Linux version of it is out and available as far as ZFS, and there should be some cross-platform compatibility there. But again, an excellent book by Michael, and it's very funny because his website, it's got all his books, and then down here at the bottom it says, "Give MWL money for no good reason," and instead of the picture of a book, it's got him just kind of reclining on this bench or something, and a cart. That was pretty darn funny. So anyway, so I'll make a plug for his material. He's an excellent writer because he gets concepts across to people, but he does it in a humorous way.
Yeah.
I think humor is just a great vehicle for a lot of things.
Yes.
Especially with me to blab on. So.
Very cool.
All right.
And Mary, you had a convention scene, didn't you?
I do. I've got the Linux convention scene for February 2016.
All right.
Yeah. You know, we've got actually three for this upcoming month. The first one, and sad to say, it's the registrations are sold out, and this is for linux.conf.au. So it's down in, if you didn't figure it out, it's down in Australia. Hmm. It's February 1st through the 5th, 2016, at Deakin University in Geelong, Australia. I apologize in advance if I've mispronounced that. LinuxConf AU is an informal grassroots event where the hallway track is just as valuable as the formal conference schedule. The conference has spawned a close-knit and tightly connected community in both Australia and internationally. So I've got a link to the website. And even though you're not going, just check it out for maybe next year and you want to do a winter vacation, that's the place to go. Right. Although I think it's a long plane ride.
Right.
The next one is coming up February 22nd through the 25th. It's FAST 16. This is at the Hyatt Regency in Santa Clara, California. Now, FAST 16 brings together storage system researchers, practitioners to explore new directions in the design, implementation, evaluation, and deployment of storage systems. It's the 14th USENIX conference on file and storage technologies. What's interesting about this is that on February 22nd, which is the first day of this conference, it's going to be the Free BSD Storage and Summit. And then on February 25th, it's going to be the Linux FAST Summit. And not because they saved the best for last. It's just, you know, beauty before. Never mind. But anyway, so that's why, those are the kind of two angles and what make that conference interesting to me.
Very cool.
Yeah. And then finally, we have got, it's called GUG. It's the German, now I think if you're a German speaker, you're going to probably be more interested in this because I think it's going to be in German, but I did want to include it because it's multiple days, which usually means it's a pretty big size one. It's the German Unix User Group, and this is their Spring 2016 meeting. It's February 23rd through the 26th at the University of Cologne in Germany. This is is an annual event for professionals in the field of Unix, networks, IT, security. It also is the House Congress of the German Unix User Group. So I suspect there'll probably be some Linux people there, maybe. And maybe some BSD people. You just never know. Unix-like operating systems.
All those people get around.
Yeah, they're all going to be there. So it says high-level speakers from the German-speaking countries report on news and information technology and their projects. And it's a very vibrant professional community. And if you speak German, I think that's an advantage in going to that particular event. So, ladies and gentlemen, that's the Linux convention scene. I actually should call it the open source convention scene for February 2016. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Mary.
You're welcome.
All right. So I think we're coming to toward the end of the show, right? We got some music.
We're careening toward the end.
Sliding to the
sleigh. That's right. I don't know. One horse open source sleigh. Yeah.
One open source sleigh.
There we go. All right. Man, we should reward you know what we should do, Tony?
What's that?
We should reward some song and then have that as our outro.
Yes.
That'd be funny. All right.
All right, so coming up for the music, I have no good music, so we're going to do...
So we're going to play bad music.
We're going to play bad music.
No, what do we rely on when we don't have something preset?
The...
Nine Inch Nails.
Yeah, random Nine Inch Nails song.
Yeah, so what do we have?
So what random number do you want?
17.
17?
Yeah, it's a prime number.
All right. Then?
I like prime numbers.
I do, too. 19, 17, 13,
song, 11. Song 17 goes to...
That's enough.
Yeah.
good thing it's the end of the show.
Right. All right. So you've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. This was episode 177.
Snownix.
Snownix.
Yeah. Get your bread and I hope you already have your milk and bread.
Yeah.
did you see that meme going around where it's a bowl with bread and milk poured on top of it?
Nice.
Yeah. No, I didn't.
Yeah,
see
as
that.
If that's the only thing you really need.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
I need internet, flies out really.
The, you know. Right. Yeah.
If I'm snowed, I just need
internet and crackers.
Yeah. Internet, Linux. Yeah.
All right. This is Tony Bemis,
Mary Tomich,
and Tom Lawrence.
See you next time. Bowl. Well, you know, you see those shots of the grocery stores and the. That shelves up a rift of products because people bought all that stuff. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
So, all right.
You've been listening to the Sunday Morning Linux Review. If you would like more information about this or other shows, go to smlr.us. Feel free to send comments to show@smlr.us or give us a call at 734-258-7009. I'm John Miller. If you don't like it, you can
bite my 8-bit metal ass. That's bite with a Y.
Hi, folks. This is Chatter. Jay Wisher, Honky Magoo 5150, and I have started a new podcast. Yeah, I know we should have gotten Brian Lunduk to do the voiceover, but he wanted a script, and none of us are any good at scripting language. Anyway, it's Linux Lugcast. We're at linuxlugcast.com, IRC channel, pound Linux Lugcast on Freenode. We record on the first and third Fridays of the month, 9 p.m. Eastern Time, 0200 UTC. We talk about things we've tried, things we got to work, things we failed to get working, things we built, and things we broke. Email us at feedback@linuxlugcast.com, and if we don't know the answer, we'll just tell you to install Arch. That's a joke, son. So join us as we stifle the outcry of voices everywhere for another Linux podcast.
Linux Luddites is a show where we try out all the latest free and open source software and then decide we like the old stuff better.
More than just news and releases, we check out a wide range of Linux distros, cover your feedback, talk about obscure command line programs, discuss burning issues over a pint, and much, much more. So join me, Paddy,
and me, Joe, every 2 weeks for news, reviews, comment, and generally being grumpy at linuxluddites.com.
Linux Luddites, because not all change is progress.
Open source, Linux, computers, electronics, science, and amateur radio. We cover it all. Who are we? We are Linux in the Ham Shack, the podcast that brings you and your technology together with the power of software freedom. Drop us in your favorite podcatcher or join us every other Tuesday night for the interactive live show. Visit lhspodcast.info for all the details, news, and information. We are Linux in the Ham Shack, and we want to open your mind.
The Linux Link Tech Show, live every Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time. Tune in to the world's longest-running Linux podcast. On the web, www.tllts.org. By email, techshow@thelinuxlink.net. IRC channel, thelinuxlink.net, port 6667/techshow. And Flying Rich is so hot.